The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. It's time to bring out the better worldian in all of us. Welcome to Better Worldians Radio with your hosts, Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. Better Worldians Radio inspires you with the people and ideas that are making the world a better place. You'll hear how small acts can make a big difference every day. Now, here are Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory.
Hi, this is Ray Hansel. Welcome to Better Worldians Radio. Better Worldians Radio is a weekly broadcast whose mission is to uplift and inspire you to make the world a better place. Every week, we are speaking with best-selling authors, film producers, TED speakers, happiness experts, and also everyday folks just like you whose small acts are making a big difference in the world. And that's why we call them Better Worldians. And speaking of Better Worldians, let me introduce you now to my co-host, Mary Sue Hansel and Gregory Hansel. Mary Sue has been a successful entrepreneur and business executive for over 30 years. She's also an avid practitioner of the healing arts, positive psychology, and spirituality. And now, here's my life partner, Mary Sue.
Hi, everyone. It's great to be here with you today to share all the good that's being done in the world. Now, our son Gregory this week's on special assignment, but he'll sure be back next week. By the way, we're the family team that created the popular social game on Facebook called A Better World. It rewards players for doing good deeds while helping to raise money and awareness for charities. To date, over 25 million good deeds have been done in A Better World by more than 2.7 million people. And in the month of December, we are supporting Operation Warm, a nonprofit that brings happiness and warmth to children in need by providing them with brand new winter coats. When our players complete 300,000 good deeds in the game this month, we'll release funds to purchase new winter coats for 50 kids in need.
Joining us this week on Better Worldians Radio is Kyle Zimmer, founder, CEO, and president of First Book, a nonprofit that provides access to new books for children in need. In 1992, Kyle Zimmer, then a corporate attorney, was volunteering regularly at a soup kitchen in Washington, D.C. Realizing that the kids she was working with had no books to call their own, she set out with some friends to remedy the situation. 21 years and more than 110 million brand new books later, Kyle continues to lead First Book. Under Kyle's leadership, First Book distributes millions of new books and educational resources every year to a growing network of schools and programs across the United States and Canada. Among numerous other honors, Kyle Zimmer received the 2014 Literarian Award from the National Book Foundation. Also joining us today is First Book Senior Advisor Carrie Palmquist. Carrie is responsible for assisting First Book's leadership team execute on new ideas for growth strategy and innovation. Carrie joined First Book after more than 4 years as Executive Director of Operation Warm. Kyle, thanks so much for joining us today on Better Worldians Radio.
It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. We're really anxious to talk to you today about all the work that you are doing. I guess I can start by just asking you about the role reading played in your life as a child.
Well, I was brought up, lucky me, I was brought up in a home with lots and lots of books and a real focus on education. So I remember the books that were dear to my parents and my brothers and sisters, and we always knew, and there was sort of a mantra in the family that education was the way to elevate the world. And so, from my earliest days, very central to my life.
Now, you began First Book when you were a corporate attorney volunteering, as I indicated in the introduction, at a soup kitchen in Washington, D.C. Can you tell us a little bit about what led you to the realization that so many kids in need don't have books to call their own?
Well, it was kind of a startling revelation to me. I think just because I had been lucky, and it hadn't occurred to me that books weren't, you know, just sort of around in schools and laying around at home. And so I did. I started volunteering after work, 25 years ago in Washington at a little place called Martha's Table, which at the time was kind of a bare-bones soup kitchen. And every time I would go in, you know, there would be 50 kids in there with big smiles, and they were doing everything right. You know, they were coming in out of a dangerous neighborhood. They were looking for adult intervention. They showed up every single night, and we were there, and we couldn't do a lot with that time. We couldn't do enough with that time because there were no books at the program and no books in their homes, and the library had been closed, and there, you know, in most of the schools in those areas, the resources are really stretched as well. And so I just kept thinking that those hours could be so much more valuable if you could just pull a kid onto your lap and read a book with them, you know. And so that's sort of where it all started.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you go about getting the books for the children in need? How did you go about the actual process of acquiring the books?
Well, I've always had a public sector heart and a private sector head. And so, you know, the first thing I did for a few weeks was I would stop at a local bookstore and pick up books on my way over to the soup kitchen. But the problem is so much bigger than that the sort of systemic private sector part of my brain clicked in, and I realized that if we're really going to crack this issue, if we're really going to make books and stories accessible, that it needed more than me stopping at the local bookstore. It needed a systemic solution.
And you went actually from the day-to-day rigor of a corporate attorney to actually starting up and running this nonprofit that supplied books for kids. So how did that change your life?
Well, I think, in a lot of ways, it didn't change it. You know, as far as, like, I always have been a bit of a workaholic. And so, you know, in this case, my clients are, you know, kids in need all across the United States and happily now Canada. And but I think that I am and I know you guys are as well, just a very mission driven individual. And so I always felt that way with the clients I represented. I always took their mission on to be my own. And this sort of allowed me to choose what I believe is, you know, the issue of our time, and that is education, equal opportunity to quality education, and really embrace it with every fiber and every moment. And so there aren't very many people who get the opportunity to do that with their lives, and so I've always felt very, very fortunate.
Well, speaking of equal opportunity, I see here that 42% of children in the United States, that's actually more than 30 million, live in low-income households, and most of these children have no age-appropriate books at home. So what impact does that have on a child?
You know, the impact of the failure in this system, it's hard to overstate it. It starts with the child in school feeling like a failure. And kids who can't read and who are not learners, they don't disappear after childhood. They grow up to be adults who can't read and have very limited opportunities. It has profound implications for employment. It has profound implications in our criminal justice system for people who feel like they have no other opportunities. It has profound implications for healthcare. And you know, it grows to all of those issues have a bigger footprint at the community level, at the state level, and at our national level with whether we are competitive economically. It also, you know, we're all very proud of our democracy, and we should be, but there's a hole in our democracy right now, and it's these kids and the adults that they become, because, you know, what does the right to vote mean if you can't inform yourself before the election? What does the freedom of speech mean if you can't articulate and you can't write and you can't engage and advocate on behalf of yourself and your community and your own kids? And so there's a gigantic ripple effect that starts with a tragedy for the child and ends in a crisis for the country.
Mm-hmm. So the problem is broad and it's deep, and I'd like to shift gears now and talk a little bit about some of the solutions and specifically what First Book does to deal with some of the that problem. First Book provides new books and educational resources at very, very reduced prices and in some cases for free to schools and programs serving these children in need. So tell us a little bit about how you go about doing that.
Well, we have two big systems, two big jet engines. One is called the First Book National Book Bank, and the other one is called the First Book Marketplace. And Carrie can describe the book bank.
The book bank is a really great way to get a lot of excess books from publishers out to the network that we serve. Publishers have millions of new books every year that go unread, and First Book created the first and only clearinghouse for publishers' excess inventory. And so as a First Book member, a recipient group, you have access not only to our marketplace, which Kyle will describe in a moment, but also to the vast quantity and variety of books that are available through publishers who actually donate them to First Book.
Mm-hmm. So the second
system is the First Book Marketplace. And the First Book Marketplace is a real jet engine model that we invented about 7 years ago. And what it does is it aggregates the market at the base of the economic pyramid. So it's the lowest 30% of the socioeconomic ladder in the United States. All the schools and programs and preschools and after schools that work with that population are eligible to register with us and purchase books through us at dramatically reduced pricing. So these are award-winning titles. These are not the books that didn't sell. These are the best in show. We offer more than 5,000 titles. And the average price, including shipping, is about $2.85. And registering with us, by the way, is free of charge. And so we are out there trying to urge everybody and anyone who's listening to this, if you know of a school or a program, please, please, please go on to firstbook.org and make sure they're registered and receiving the resources.
So now we talked about the two jet engines. So let's bring this down a little bit to the ground row, and actually talk more at the very personal level. What's it like when a child receives his or her first ever new book?
You know, there is a magic in this that I have never gotten over, and I will tell you that it's layered. You know, there sort of three layers. One is the child who receives it. A second layer are all the dedicated, heroic teachers and volunteers who get those resources and can do wonderful things with them that they've always dreamed about doing, but haven't had the resources to do it. And finally, it's the families, the parents and caregivers, because it can change the dynamic at home too. And, you know, when I think about the magic, I think about the kids who I have met over the years. And, you know, for example, I grew up in Southern Ohio, and I went to an event in southern Ohio, close to where I grew up. And a little boy about 8 years old came flying in the front door of this event to get his books. And he came running over to me. And this kid could have been my son. And he said, in his thickest southern Ohio accent, he said, "Ma'am, do you have any Spanish books?" And I looked at this little face and I said to him, I was thinking, my goodness, things have changed since I grew up here because they're teaching Spanish. And I said to him, "Well, honey, are you taking Spanish in school?" And he said, "No, but this is my big chance to get it." And I think about that kid, you know, when I'm up at 2 a.m. and I still got 3 things to do. And I think that's really what it's all about. It's that big chance.
Yeah, you see that delight in the little child's eyes, and it carries you to that jet engine and motivates you. So I like to shift gears a little bit once more before we go to the break. I want to ask a little bit about the authors that have gotten involved with First Book and supported the cause. What tell us a little bit about that involvement.
We have a lovely network of authors that's constantly expanding. Everybody from Mary Pope Osborne, who has written all the Magic Treehouse books, and to Sharon Draper, to, you know, just a gigantic range. And they do everything for us. They consult with us on what books our kids ought to be reading, what we ought to be offering. They offer us advice as to how to be heard and how to approach schools and how to approach kids through our networks. And often they make wonderful financial contributions of their royalties, you know, of some of their books. It's, you know, these are people who love writing and love storytelling, and they walk around sad that we are leaving millions of kids out of that conversation.
Well, we're going to be continuing that very same conversation in a few minutes, but we're going to have to take a break right now. We'll be talking when we come back with Kyle Zimmer and Carrie Palmquist about First Book's mission to provide new books to kids in need when we get back. In the meantime, I want to tell you a bit about our Indiegogo campaign that's now funding at abetterworld.com/kidsgame. A Better World for Kids is a tablet game, a mobile game that lets kids have fun and make a difference through the good deeds they do in the real world and through positive thinking. If you're not familiar with crowdfunding, you can think of it as like the Amish people raising a barn, helping their neighbors in a community, coming together to support an idea and a mission. We're asking our supporters to put their money where their heart is. To do so, you can go to abetterworld.com/kidsgame to learn more and to help us fund A Better World for Kids. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
How can we make it a better world?
I think we can make it a better world if we had peace among each other.
Everybody needs to help their neighbor, and then it will spread from then on.
I should do more.
I could do more. I spend so much time on Facebook.
How much time do I spend on Facebook?
Probably more than I should be spending.
I would definitely get back if I could find the time.
Now you can help others just by playing a game on Facebook. It's called A Better World. Share your hopes and dreams. Do good deeds. Make a difference. And have fun. Become a Better Worldian. Join a community where all good deeds get rewarded. Log in today to find out how you can make a difference every day.
For more information, visit facebook.com/abetterworld.
Ask the experts. Call toll free right now. 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Thank you.
This is Better Worldians Radio with a family team of Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. To connect with the show today, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send us an email to radio@betterworldians.com. Now, back to Better Worldians Radio.
You're listening to Better Worldians Radio. We're speaking with First Book founder, CEO, and President Kyle Zimmer and Senior Advisor Carrie Palmquist. And now let's welcome back Kyle, Carrie, and Mary Sue.
Hi, Kyle and Carrie.
Hello.
Hi, Mary Sue.
Hi. I hear you have a very exciting announcement that you would like to make about First Book. Please share
it with our listeners. Well, we do. We are thrilled to be with you guys to announce that by the end of this year, we will have given away our 125 million books to kids across the U.S. and Canada. And so that's a wonderful new benchmark, and we're delighted to share it with you first.
Oh, we're so excited to hear that. That's just mind-boggling. That's wonderful. And how many kids do you think that impacted?
Well, you know, right now we serve a network of about 155,000 programs and classrooms. And, you know, it's way into the millions. And, you know, one of the things you always have to remember is that when you hand a book to a kid and they take it home, what we hear are the wonderful stories that they read it with their brothers and sisters, or they read it with their parents and caregivers. So the good news goes on and on.
It just spreads and spreads. Well, congratulations. That's just wonderful work.
I just wanted to jump in real quickly, I wanted to go back to the story that Kyle was telling about the 8-year-old boy, because that story has actually sort of empowered First Book to do something about the very question that little boy asked. So I would like Kyle to go ahead and finish that story and talk about what was done about answering his question and future questions.
Oh, the little boy that wanted to know if he had Spanish books?
Right. And so First Book has really taken on the issue of diversity in children's books. And not only do we currently offer a great selection of Spanish books, but we also have launched something called Stories for All. And Stories for All is the first program of its kind that really tries to solve the long-standing issue of the lack of diversity in children's books by elevating the market for those books and by making it an economic possibility for publishers to step into that space. A great example of this is we surveyed our network, as I said, of 155,000 programs and classrooms, and asked them, what do you need? You know, what do you want? Because they ought to be the ones driving that. And they came back to us with a request for a bilingual, very hungry caterpillar. And everybody, you know, a lot of people, almost everybody is familiar with the book, The Very Hungry Caterpillar. It's a wonderful Eric Carle book that has been read to, I know, my children over and over and over again. And while it existed in Spanish and it existed in English, there had never been a bilingual edition. And so we contacted the publisher, and we laid an initial order on the table for 30,000 copies if they would produce a bilingual edition, and they stepped right up to the plate and produced a beautiful new version. And we now have made about 135,000 copies of that book available through our systems, and now it's available at retail for everybody. We just also launched the Goodnight Moon, a bilingual edition, which is another classic that everybody's enjoying.
That's great. I really like that. the fact that, you know, you have so many different bilingual books out there now, and it seems that the publishers are so cooperative. I was reading that you reached out to publishers and promised to buy books from unpublished authors, too, that feature characters for the unrepresented communities. Can you talk a bit about that?
Sure. You know, the publishing industry is a victim of the of its own industry design because, you know, it's a consignment-based industry. And so the books that aren't purchased at retail go back to the publisher. And what that means is they have to, when they price books at retail, of course, they have to include in the price of books all the inventory that they know will end up coming back to them. And so it elevates the price of books. So right now, for example, the average price of a premium picture book is $18. Wow. Well, what that means is the only families who can consistently, go and purchase those are really very, very affluent families. And so there are lots of implications for that. And one of the pieces of bad news, of course, is that families in need don't have consistent access to those wonderful high quality books. But the other thing is that it narrows the books that are produced because they're aiming at that upper most affluent group of people in the United States market. And so it fundamentally means all white. And so we end up with a problem where 93% of the books that are produced are by and about white themes and reference points. And this is a University of Wisconsin study that was released now two times confirming the results. So we stepped out with Stories for All and we said, no, there's a huge market. There's a huge interest in books by and about all cultures. And we will help the publishers get there by opening up our systems and allowing for the first time ever by using the way we do pricing and by the way we do our distribution, allowing the publishers access to this much fuller, much more diverse market. And they are anxious to get there. So they've stepped right up. And we have over 26 publishing houses that have jumped up to participate. So it's been an extraordinary transformation. We're still on the early edge of it, but the early signs are very, very hopeful that we'll make progress.
Wow, that was a very innovative idea that really helped all those underrepresented communities. I also heard that you received funding from Disney early this year to curate a collection of books for Latino children. Tell us about that and what impact that had.
That was really very exciting for First Book and for our network of providers. The collection celebrates Latino history and culture, and through that gift from Disney, we were able to connect more than 35,000 new Latino-serving groups to our First Book network. And that's the first piece, is getting people engaged with First Book and having them understand what resources are available. So that is a huge component of our mission, is making sure folks understand that they can have access to the resources that we provide. We were also able, through that gift, to distribute more than 270,000 culturally relevant books with a retail value of over $2.6 million, which was pretty amazing. And we were able to introduce 127 new titles through that gift. So it was extraordinary and really reached a population that we've been striving to reach, because now we were able to offer something that was of great interest to them.
You know, you mentioned that you had great success with, you know, when you give these books to the older children, that they read them to the younger children. How does that help? How does that help in this situation? What's happening? How do the role models change?
Well, you know, families are always the most important educators in a kid's life. And through all these years working at First Book, you know, the thing that is most hopeful to me personally are those stories, because
yes.
What it tells us is that this is a problem that we can actually solve together. And, you know, when you read the paper today, it's filled with some pretty overwhelming bad news. And a person can be led to believe that there's not a lot of hope sometimes, you know. And because the problems seem enormous and beyond our capacity as individuals. And despite the fact that the poverty rates are extraordinary and unprecedented in the U.S. These days, the problem of literacy, the problem of access to books and turning children into readers is actually one that is solvable. And it is hopeful. And because literate people do not have illiterate children. So once a family has crossed over that bridge and the older kids are reading to the younger kids, that part of that family tree never goes back. Then they become part of the solution, because then they can read to other kids, they can read to their cousins, they can read, you know, then you've turned them into better worldians, if I may, you know, then they've become part of the solution, and they're activists in their own family, on their own behalf, and they can elevate everything.
I love that, better worldian readers. Now, do the books go to the schools and to the children as separate operations, or does it go to the schools who give them to the children?
It goes everywhere. You know, we believe that kids need 360-degree surround sound with books. And in addition, I should say, other wonderful educational resources as well, which we also provide. But we give... we work with school libraries. We work with public libraries, homeless shelters, healthcare settings, every imaginable place serving kids 0 to 18. Some of them use them for standing libraries. Some of them lend them out to families, and some of them give them so that kids can start their own home libraries, and we want to support it all.
Wonderful. I wanted to chat with Carrie just for a second. Carrie, we spoke to you last year and had a great interview. You, I think it was last December. What attracted you to First Book?
You know, that's a really great question, and it's a fabulous answer from my perspective. I was introduced to Kyle when First Book came and was talking to Operation Warm about potentially offering coats on the First Book marketplace. And you know, sitting in a couple of meetings with Kyle, I was so inspired by her vision and the fact that this is a social enterprise. I'm very entrepreneurial at heart, and I saw something in Kyle and Kyle's vision that I was very eager to jump on board with, because of the way that they're crafting their mission and the way that they're deciding to reach as large a group as they're reaching. It's very, very much a social enterprise as opposed to a charity. And having been an executive director of a charitable organization and seeing firsthand the challenges around fundraising, the competitiveness around, you know, there are literally hundreds of thousands of incredible, incredible mission-oriented organizations out there, and the competition for funding is fiercer and fiercer each day as more and more folks need help. And what First Book is doing, and I'm very proud to be a part of the team now, is figuring out innovative and alternative ways to keep this mission going without depending so heavily on external funders. And so I knew that I stood to learn a great deal from Kyle. I've been here almost 4 months now. I've learned a lot. I have a lot more to learn. But the social enterprise and social innovation is what really inspired me to to move from Operation Warm to First Book. It's an education for me and something I'm very excited about.
Yes, maybe you can share a little bit more about that with our listeners. They may not be familiar with the difference between a charity and a social enterprise.
Sure. With a charity, you know, it's very dependent on outside funding sources through foundations, corporations, or other institutional funders. A social enterprise really aims to become self-funded through the work that they do. And so Marketplace, the jet engine that Kyle referred to earlier, and that innovation through the Marketplace and through the growth of the Marketplace and having more recipient groups purchase products from us at very low and discounted prices will mean that we have the cash infused back into the organization to make further investments in the products that are available. And so while we are very certainly all nonprofits do depend on external funding, the model that Kyle has created here does afford us the opportunity to help infuse the mission back with funding from the recipient groups. And Kyle, you might want to expand on that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, right this second, First Book, we do probably about 14 or 15 million books a year. We have gotten to the point where we are about 50% funded by the revenue we generate ourselves, and 50% we looked, as Carrie said, to external sources, so individuals and foundations and corporations that are all wonderfully generous to us. If we do this right in the next couple of years, we will be able to wean ourselves off of those funding sources and be fully self-supporting. And so we need help now. We need help to get there. But our sight is on and our designs are to push us towards self-sufficiency as fast as we can, because what we believe is that the wonderful generosity of your listeners and corporations and others in the world, it should be reserved for the next round of social innovations that need that early money to get them off the launch pad. So that they can begin, they can get to self-sufficiency as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that clarification. Carrie, you were mentioning that, you know, there is a similar population between Operation Warm and First Book. Have you folks ever considered collaborating?
We absolutely have. And again, that's originally how I met Kyle and the First Book team was through some inquiries that Kyle was making as to how Operation Warm was serving their population, and it's the same. It's the same group of folks that we're serving. And so the idea was back then was to get coats offered on the First Book Marketplace, and I'm very happy to say that Operation Warm and First Book are now collaborating, and we are offering Operation Warm coats on the First Book Marketplace, which is really critically important because, as you know, and as we talked about last December when we did a great interview, you know, kids who don't get to school don't even have the opportunity for access to the books. And so it's all very integral to their health and well-being that they have the appropriate attire to get to school where they can learn. So we are very thrilled that Operation Warm has allowed us to offer the coats on the marketplace here, and they went up on our marketplace several weeks ago now, and they're absolutely getting purchased by teachers and program leaders who understand the value of getting kids to school. And so the collaboration has started. We're thrilled with it, and we hope to have more of that in the future.
And I think this is Kyle jumping in. I think that, you know, there are too many kids waiting. There are millions of kids waiting, and the last thing that should happen is that all of the nonprofits build separate sets of train tracks in to help them. We shouldn't waste 5 cents duplicating efforts. We've got to build the structures and the systems with the same efficiency that we apply on the private sector side must be pushed onto the social side so that we can provide them with the food they need, with the winter coats, with the books, with the whatever they need. We should be all working together and not duplicating and wasting funds and time.
Great thought, and we're going to be taking a break at this point from that thought and talking more when we get back with Kyle Zimmer and Carrie Palmquist. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
How can we make it a better world?
I think we can make it a better world if we had peace among each other.
Everybody needs to help their neighbor, and then it will spread from there on.
I should do more.
I could do more. I spend so much time on Facebook.
How much time do I spend on Facebook?
Probably more than I should be spending.
I would definitely get back if I could find the time.
Now you can help others just by playing a game on Facebook. It's called A Better World. Share your hopes and dreams. Do good deeds. Make a difference. And have fun. Become a better worldian. Join a community where all good deeds get rewarded. Log in today to find out how you can make a difference every day.
For more information, visit facebook.com/abetterworld.
Ask the experts. Call toll free right now. 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Better Worldians Radio with a family team of Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. To connect with the show today, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send us an email to radio@betterworldians.com. Now, back to Better Worldians Radio.
We're back now with First Book CEO Kyle Zimmer and Senior Advisor Carrie Palmquist.
Hello again, Kyle and Carrie.
Hello. Yeah.
First Book was recently able to reach out to children in the Ebola-affected areas of Liberia. Can you tell our listeners about that? It sounds fascinating.
Sure. You know, we First Book has always been designed to not duplicate efforts, but to support efforts that are already on the ground. And we were contacted by a group in Liberia that was focused on the fact that children were now being pulled out of school for months at a time because of the concerns, the obvious concerns of the spread of the illness. Mm-hmm. And while that protected their health, it was causing a big hole in their educational progress. And these were families that were in desperate economic need to begin with. And so they reached out to us and said, is it possible for us to work with you guys to provide books to these families, and we raised the funds for shipping, and First Book stepped up with books so that the books could be distributed and kids at a minimum would have books in their homes to entertain them, to occupy them, and also so they just didn't lose touch with those skill sets during the weeks and months of this crisis.
Great story. You know, I read also that Disney recently made a major announcement about a partnership with you folks to distribute $55 million worth of books and apps for kids. That's just so exciting. Can you tell us more about that?
I'm delighted to. Disney has been an extraordinary partner of First Books for years, And this is just, and they've supported us financially. They've supported us strategically. They've supported us through design work. You know, they really have been a deep dive partner of ours. This most recent announcement was made at the White House just last week. Oh. They did, as you said, they announced a $55 million grant of books and apps over a 3-year period. And they also announced a $1 million commitment in cash to First Book to support the distribution of those resources to the kids who are waiting for them. It's a real hero story.
Oh, wonderful. Did you get to go to the White House?
You know, I didn't get to go that time, but I've had the honor of being over there before. And okay. I've lived in Washington a long time, and I've never gotten over the goosebumps that you get when you walk into the White House.
Wonderful.
I'd like to jump in here and ask you, both of you guys, if $1 million unrestricted grant just landed in your hands today, what would you use the grant for?
Well, as my mother would have said to you, from your mouth to God's ears. I'll say to you that, you know, when you're serving a network of more than 150,000 formal and informal educators, and a network that, by the way, is growing by over 5,000 every single month. There is a demand on our IT systems that is really Herculean, and it's very, very tough to raise money to meet that, to keep those systems as strong and vibrant and engaging as you need to, because it's the least glamorous thing. You know, people want, when they step up to First Book, they want to be the ones who deliver that book to that smiling kid, and I understand that impulse, but the truth is, if we had $1 million laying on the table right this second, we would squeeze every penny, and we would make sure that the systems we built brought books to millions more children, because there are leverage points that we could reach with $1 million that would allow us to, you know, reach many, 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 many more sites.
Yeah, infrastructure is such an unglamorous word, but so important to build on and to grow and to leverage, that people just don't understand it. But now, you recently were named the National Book Foundation's 2014 Literarian Medalist. What did that mean to you guys?
Well, you know, It meant the world to us. It meant the world to us. The National Book Awards are, it's one of the preeminent, in all the world, one of the preeminent institutions. It recognizes the highest quality writers in the U.S. And it's known, the National Book Awards in the United States are known all over the world. And so for them to select First Book meant, you know, that we were being recognized on that level. And we've got an office here and filled with people who, you know, work their hearts out 24/7 and are just mission people to the marrow of their bones. And everyone in the organization walked around about 6 inches off the ground for days and days after that. It was very heartening. It was just lovely.
Oh, that's wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful news. So tell our listeners, how can they help support First Book during this holiday season and way beyond the holiday season? How can these people be of assistance?
Well, I think that there are two big ways. One is, it's really important that we reach every program serving kids in need. Formal programs, informal programs, school-based, library, every setting where children in need are gathered, we want them to register. And so we really want to get the word out that it's free to register. All they have to do is go on to firstbook.org. And there's no obligation to purchase books through us, but they then have the opportunity to get those free books, to get those low-cost books, and it allows us to continue to reach out, you know, in all those leveraged ways, like providing books through or coats through Operation Warm, to provide food to hungry kids, and lots of highly leveraged strategies. So number one is let's get everybody registered. And number two is, even if you don't have much money, $2.85 will put a book in a child's hand. So please come on to our site and share that gift with kids who are waiting over the holiday season. That would be lovely and generous, and we promise that we will make it go a long, long way.
I'm sure you will. You guys are really doing the work that needs to be done, and be very, very thoughtful and caring about the need to squeeze that dollar and really make it work and make the biggest impact in the broadest sense. So with that in mind, each of you, please ask this question of Kyle and then also of Carrie. What is your vision for how First Book is helping to make the world a better place? This is a question we ask every week of our guests because we're better worldians, and we want to know what's their contribution to make the world a better place.
Well, I think, you know, earlier on, I'm not sure if we were on break or not, but one of the things that you mentioned, Ray, is that folks don't necessarily know about all of the services that are out there to help people who need help. And I think that, you know, First Book's innovation and First Book's ability to reach as many people as we're reaching, and now by offering things other than just books, is a really incredible way to sort of aggregate the services. And I think that, you know, again, I'm very excited about how First Book is approaching it and how they're very open to hearing what our customers need, listening to the voices of the folks that are serving the kids in need and saying, it's not just books. We need to know how to use the books. How do we teach things through these books? Can you help us do that? Can you help us get, you know, some of these kids don't have any food when they go home at night, or they're coming to school hungry. And, you know, so now we're offering food on the marketplace that teachers can order so that their kids can, you know, have full bellies so that they're happy to be learning and they're not distracted. And I think all of this together in the aggregate is what's going to make the world a better place. I really believe in my heart and soul that we have to collaborate, we have to work together to really impact these kids.
Mm-hmm. And the thing that I would add from my perspective is, you know, storytelling is something that has been core to humanity since the earliest days of our existence, right? We have painted on cave walls, we've beaten drums, we've shared stories orally, and over all of those millennia, stories, those activities were accessible to everybody. We told each other about the weather, about hunting, about life, and about religion, and about culture, and you know, you couldn't exclude people from hearing the drumbeat or sitting around the fire and listening to stories. And so really, it's very recent, you know, in our history as humans, when we have been excluding, when people have been excluded from the power of stories, from the power of sharing their cultures and their ideas and the explanations of the grander world because of this problem with access. And so we can't be surprised when you exclude large segments of the population from this core part of who we are and how we share who we are, we can't be surprised that society begins to unravel a bit. And we're here to fix that. We're here to change that. And I think it will have incredible ripple effects that transcend literacy and really elevate us all.
I believe you're right on the mark with your thinking on that. I mean, I was thinking as you were speaking that we ultimately have our own individual narratives, and we begin to explore that narrative by reading about others and by reading in general, so that we begin to make sense of who are we, what's our contribution. So these children, they begin that journey by reading that first book. And by becoming literate and by passing that on to the children and their families and so on and so on. An exciting journey. I commend you guys for the great work that you're doing and the impact that you're providing for the Better Worldians and for all the people in the world. You can find out more about First Book by going to firstbook.org. Kyle, Carrie, I want to thank you both for joining us on Better Worldians Radio today.
Thanks for having us. Thanks so much.
Yeah, it was a wonderful, wonderful show. I think that our listeners really got a treat today by hearing all the good work that's going on. Before we go, I'd like to remind all of our listeners one last time that our Indiegogo campaign is now funding at abetterworld.com/kidsgame, and we're off to a pretty good start. But we need your help to get A Better World for Kids fully funded and get that game in the hands of children around the world. The game will have kids having fun and still making a difference through the good deeds they do in the world, as well as the positive thinking that they demonstrate both offline and in the virtual world game as well. So please consider making a pledge to support our mission to create a better world for kids and spread the word. Let people know about it. Every little bit helps. So go to abetterworld.com/kidsgame to learn more and help fund A Better World for Kids. And until next time, all of our listeners, please have a wonderful Christmas, a happy holiday, and until next time, please be a better worldian.
Thank you again for helping make the world just a little bit better this week. Please join your hosts, Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel next Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope we've inspired you to do one small thing to help make a big difference. Join us at BetterWorldians.com to tell us what you've done to change the world.